football on off the ball.
We've all talked about it, you know, it's time for other people to step up, losing big characters as they were, and obviously the lads who have played a lot of games, they'll be missed obviously, but it's up to the rest of us to stand up, and I feel like in pre-season so far we have been.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do? He's got the third! Oh, beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi ice machine salesman nearly pulled the deal off. Dropping in your OTB football podcast feed this Monday. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors.
It's AOD and it's DSN as FRA beat IRE 36-14. So for anyone who missed it last night, on the off chance, France 22-0 up at halftime. Added that in the second half to 29. Ireland got 2 tries. France got 1 at the end. 5 tries to 2. 36-14. Ireland missed 38 tackles. France had 19 offloads to Ireland's 5. France had 19 line breaks to Ireland's 4. The lineup was good. 17 from 18. Set piece wasn't bad. But damning work of analysis is ahead of us this morning. Caelan Dyers in the immediate aftermatch, the captain, spoke to the TV, said there's too much work to do after the first half. Lacking bite, we allowed him to play. Not good enough in the collisions. Kick chase was attempted, but it wasn't good enough. Decent impact from the bench. We let them offload too much. Andy Farrell added to that. France played a different game to us in the first half. Dyers, Mitnachten, what do you have to say for yourself? As our rugby boy.
As if I started, yeah.
What did you have to say?
Yeah, it's a tough one to break down, isn't it?
The breakdown was tough.
I don't know where to start.
Yeah, well, what's hitting you first of all, you know? Is it France's brilliance?
Well, that's exactly what they did. They hit us first of all, didn't they? They came out 29-0. We were down at one stage. I won't lie, at halftime, I think I was thinking the same thing as everyone else. This could get extremely ugly here. Mm-hmm. This could be looking at 45-0, 50-0 territory, the way we were being put to the sword. But look, I think they played decent in the second half, definitely better. The bench made a noticeable impact. Some players in there, Timoney, played quite well off the bench. Jack Conan, I thought, had a decent game off the bench.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the lads that started, disappointing, to say the least. I thought, in my opinion, the game plan was not the wrong game plan, but the lack of a plan B was pretty stark with the ball. I think it was the right idea on a wet, windy night in Paris to try and put the ball in the air, and with the way modern rugby is, try and, you know, get some set pieces off the back of it, get some scrums, get some possession further up the pitch. But I think when it became clear that LBB and Adesokbe were winning those battles in the air, we certainly didn't have a plan B to fall back on, and I think that really cost us at times. And I think when we did start to play a bit of rugby through the hands, put a few phases together in that second half with some fresh legs, I thought it was actually quite impressive, some of the stuff we were doing. But ultimately, I think there was a period there from about maybe 65 minutes into 75 where we kind of went away from that again, went back to kicking.
Yeah.
And then we started to lose possession again, and that was the kind of the tail of the tape, really. It was the lack of possession we had, lack of ball. You don't win rugby games without the ball. It's kind of a simple way to put it, but
poignant and true. The nadir was probably in the 50th minute before the rake of substitutions were made by Andy Farrell. There was a moment there right after Louis Bielbury's second try, which is his 11th try in 10 Six Nations games. This guy is actually flirting with getting into the top 10 try scorers for France already.
We could do a whole segment on Louis Bielbury.
He's only a pup. Right after that, Thomas Ramos, do you remember he ran 50 metres through the middle?
Yeah.
Gave it to Jadabert, and it was a knock-on. And at that point, I thought, this could be New Zealand territory that time. This could be real embarrassing. The turning point seemed to occur when Ireland made the changes. So Jack Crowley comes on. Sam Prendergast remained on the pitch.
Yeah.
Kind of seemed to actually improve a bit then. James Ryan, your boy Timoney, Conan came on. And like you say, between the 15th and 65th minute, better.
Yeah.
But there was a real curious continuation of the kicking strategy just when Ireland were getting a handle in possession. Like France had 70% possession at one point in that first half.
I saw a stat that we both kicked the ball 39 times. So like it wasn't that we were kicking much more than them, but they were much smarter with their choice and their range kicking. And I think, Quinny, who will be on later obviously, was on comms last night alongside Trimble. And they were both going mad over the kicking in the second half. That once we did start to find a foothold in the game, when we kept the ball in hand, Gibson Park was choosing to go to the air. And there was no chasers. No one was on the same page. And it was like, lads, what are we doing? Like, play the ball. Play the game. You're down by 20-odd points. Why are we kicking it back to them? I understand it's a wet night and you're trying to get the ball back. But that game plan has gone to shit, to be honest. Like, it's not working. You have to switch things up. That's not how rugby works. You can't just keep doing the same thing expecting it to work. Definition of insanity. I saw that phrase being thrown around a lot last night, but I don't know, disappointing overall, but yeah, they are class, Tom. They are class. You know,
it was the first time in a while we've seen Ireland play as truly the inferior side, if you get me.
South Africa,
I don't know if November. It was truly inferior.
November.
Yeah.
They were definitely the underdog, if you know what I mean. Like,
I don't think to the extent of last night. Maybe, but I don't think
not. I suppose at home and everything else, but like.
Well, I suppose we kept the score close in that game.
Yeah.
It was never too stark, the scoreline, but last night we were never in touching distance.
No, it's last night, and in that 15-minute mark, it reminded me of Ireland from the late 90s, early 2000s. It was like, God, you just have to cling on here.
Yeah.
And then they kind of reminded us a bit in the quarter of an hour. But like, people would be shouting and saying, "Who? It doesn't matter, the game is over by then." Obviously, festooned with reaction here this morning. I would say star sport, Les Miserables. The Indo says, Ireland outclasses France, prove one step ahead. Dose of Les Blues, resistance is futile as Ireland handed a French lesson, says the Irish Daily Mail. And the Examiner said, Ireland left chasing shadows. You enjoyed those shadows, Arthur, I think, to an point. I mean, you admired what you were seeing in front of you.
Obviously, it's easier when you're not, there's no vested interest.
When you don't.
Country was playing last night. Well, no sure, vested
what
interest.
What? Anyway, I'm not getting into the nuts and bolts of that.
Yeah.
What is? Yeah. What? Like, you're only as
Irish as you feel.
Exactly.
Right.
Irish. What?
But you enjoyed it.
Class.
You enjoyed it. You enjoyed.
Oh, sorry.
Third try, particularly that left to right try. Like when their second rows were combining like that with the pace of them playing like they were centres.
Yeah.
At least centres, by the way. That was a wake-up call of epic proportions of, look, we don't play rugby like the French. Like, that's not our game anyway when the going is good. When it was 2 years ago in Marseille, when they were being, that's not the way they play.
No.
But at the same time, it does remind you of, Jesus Christ, when we get going, it's not natural. There's still effort to it. There's still effort. There's a beauty to the French thing which makes you feel totally helpless at some point. And the only reprieve is you feel like they're going to have a down moment in this match. They're going to take their foot off the pedal. They usually do. And maybe that happened a little bit in the second half.
Yeah, maybe. And I think Ireland probably weren't as bad as... they obviously weren't as bad a team as the 29-0 suggested. So you're kind of... You always know. Like, they're not like way inferior to France.
Mm.
So there's probably, it always kind of makes sense. And there's probably a little bit, certainly off, it seemed to me from a very kind of naive viewpoint that a lot of the things that people were very concerned about in the build-up are not the things that went wrong.
No, set piece was very solid. Like,
The line-out was really good. Scrum was fine.
I don't know what the crack with that is, but when you're watching them, it's like, it's just like comparatively, like when you watch like that South Africa Ireland game was such a dog of a game.
Yeah.
Like, it was like for someone who had a fairly passing view and interest, who'll watch games where it's like bigger games, it's like that would turn you off it. But last night, it's just like, Jesus, if this was rugby.
Yeah,
the speed of someone. I remember there was one, I don't know where it was. All I know is it was going into the sort of right hand side of the TV to the right hand side of the post, whatever they were doing. And there was some offload, I'm not sure who was by on the French side. But he got it off in such a way that it's like I couldn't figure out how he'd done it so quickly, because he was already moving, he's probably engaged in a tackle already, and whatever way he got it off.
That was Miafu in the final.
The quickness. They seem to just have extra time to kind of do everything.
Yeah.
Out of a class.
I think something to do so well, and I think Nolan McNamara has talked about it before as well. It comes from the French clubs, is they're really good at conserving their energy and knowing when to use their energy. So when they do get the ball in space, they're absolutely lethal. You just can't keep up with them. And I think I texted you during the game, I was like, watch Ramos.
He just runs the game
from fullback. There's no one in the world like him. He doesn't get anywhere near as much praise as he should get, but he's just always an option out the back, no matter where the ball is on the field. He's always just out the back for the 10 or the 9, and then he's just an excellent passer. And even with the Tommy O'Brien kind of loose kick and chase, I thought he had a pretty poor game now by his own standards. I think he was a bit out of his depth at times, but he kind of flung up a kick and chase that was a bit loose into midfield, and Ramos picked it up so calm, so composed, just kind of stepped it aside, picked the hole, went straight up the middle, and that was the Jolly Bear knock on at the ruck. If he hadn't knocked it on there, that's another try. I think it was 29-0 at that point, so they go up into the 30s. It's getting real ugly at that stage, but yeah, they're just so good. And they're just so good at the game plan. Once they get on top, and it's been said so many times in the build-up to this game, once they get on top and a bit of momentum and the crowd gets behind them, they're just impossible to stop.
So do you think Ireland can hang with these teams anymore?
I think I don't know if we match up player-wise. I always think we have something about us, in that even the way we fought back in the second half was admirable. Like, really, it could have got really bad there. And I think they should get credit for that, which sounds very defeatist, but it could have got really, really ugly in that second half. But in terms of athletes, in terms of pace, and in terms of accuracy, like, even just thinking about the exits that they played France every time, from a restart, it would go to the same guy. Guillard would pick it up. He'd beat one or two defenders, make about 10 metres. Antoine Dupont, box kick, about 50 metres up the pitch. And it's an absolute perfect exit. And sometimes they win the ball back from that box kick. So do I think we can hang with them?
Do you think if Ireland's tactic had worked out, if they'd executed what they were trying to do last night in the first half, right?
Yeah.
Did it make sense to you? As a game plan, anyway. Yeah. So there's a world where Aaron actually would have got some joy here.
Yeah, because whenever we did get the ball back from a kick, which was, I think, two or three times across the whole game from our own kicks, we actually went through some phases and made some meters. So, like, now, I think there was evidence to suggest that it was the right game plan, but...
Did it strike you, both of you, right, watching it, did it strike you that middle of the second half that Ireland had a lack of faith in their own ball handling? And that's why the kicking was persistent. Mm. Because just when we were getting a bit of territory and possession, just when that was happening, after an hour of hanging in the game poorly, kicked the ball away. And this goes back to the Jameson Gibson Park criticism, because there's that one where he flakes it down the pitch. Now, Gary Ringrose amazingly nearly gets it.
Ringrose, he showed.
But it just seemed a bizarre tactic just when we were gaining. What do you want in any match? Control. And Ireland had none of that for an hour. And just when they're getting a little bit of it. Now, it occurred to me that there might have been that much confidence, or that was a game plan anyway. Just keep the ball away from your hands, get it up in the air.
I think that was drilled into them going into that. Everyone knew the forecast for that night, that it was going to be wet, it was going to be windy. And I think that was kind of, there was no communication in terms of we should, you know, maybe change this up a little bit. Hands is working. Phase play is kind of working here.
Yeah.
So when we do get the ball outside of our own 22, let's play a bit of rugby. Let's play a bit of ball. But that wasn't happening. They were just getting rid of it. And it was, then there was, I think there was a bit of confusion between Gibson Park and the wingers and Gary Ringrose at times in terms of when the ball was being kicked and who was chasing, because there was sometimes kicks were just put in and there was practically no chase. It was a forward chasing the ball.
A good kick looked average.
Yeah, like that's the thing. It could have been a good kick.
Yeah.
Could have been accurate, but...
Needless to say, expectedly, people are passionate about this. There's a lot of commentary coming in here. Right?
Yeah.
So Peter says, let's be ruthless with the review of the rugby. Whereas S00065705 says, it actually was a positive game for Ireland. The lineup and scrub and discipline were better than last year. Unfortunately, we did not take our chances in the first half. I don't recall much, you know. I don't recall. There was that, was the grubber kick by Sam Prendergast after the Tommy O'Brien kick.
Yeah, I thought that was a harsh call on
and
that
was
well.
A, yeah, they gave a penalty against Thomas Ramos. But other than that, Prendergast had that lovely cross kick pass to Tommy O'Brien, and he made a very brave decision to try and take on Louis Bielbery in a race.
I think he did the right thing, because then he had Bielbery coming towards him, but then Ramos was the guy right in front of him, and he made the right decision to kick it. I think he just kicked it maybe half a second too early. He didn't give himself enough ground, or he gave himself too much ground to make up, and he nearly got there, in fairness. But yeah, and I think Prendergast had that break when he got deep into the 22 off a line out, I think it was, and there was an offload that didn't go to hand to Van der Fleer. Positive play, it was the right play to make, but I think that's kind of where we lack in versatility, that Van der Fleer's mindset was, right, I'm going to clean out this ruck, as opposed to what a France back row or second row would think, right, this ball might be coming to me. I'm going to be ready for an offload if that's what's going to happen here. And he wasn't ready for it and the ball was knocked on. I don't think we had chances per se in that first half. I don't think I'd say that, but there was some positive play. It annoyed me that that crossfield kick to Tommy O'Brien was a great bit of play, but that's the last time we did it.
Yeah.
We didn't utilise it after.
It was, there was a bit of class about that. We have Susanna Mullen standing by here live from France to continue this dissection. Susanna, you were there in person, you were there afterwards. Tell us about it. What is the feeling here? Because we're trying our best to gain some positives from this, but we can't help but be honest, Susanna. This was a chastening night.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? I was sat next to Andy Dunn up in the press box, and he was live on News Talk last night, and he was really giving everybody hope in the way Andy always does with his very eloquent words. And he was... making us all believe that Ireland were actually going to come out with something and win this game. And then as the game went on, it just got increasingly clear that our hopes were about to be dashed. it was a rough night in the Stade de France, and very disappointing for the players as well.
Can you explain the handling errors and the missed tackles up close and personal? They were confusing and then infuriating watching on TV. But you had the better view of it. This was a theme and a trend that seemed to get worse as the game went on.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was every time they had half a chance, it felt that they dropped the ball. And now it was a little bit slippy. Yeah. There was a lot of rain just before kickoff, and then it kind of dried up as the whistle blew. But it definitely was. It was that kind of drizzle that makes the ball really wet and greasy. But you know, when you look at France, I don't think they knocked on a single ball in that first half. So you can't take that as an excuse. But it was incredibly frustrating, because Ireland would work hard for kind of a little bit of territory or half a chance. Ball would slip out. France would pounce on it, and they only needed a couple of passes or a couple of offloads, and they would make 20, 30, 40 metres in all that time we'd spent trying to get up the field. So it really was, they were architects of their own downfall in a way. I mean, it wasn't as if they were playing really bad rugby. It wasn't as if the game plan was really bad. It was just individual errors that cost them over and over again.
Mm. Aaron here says, we lost during the anthems, Susanna. As bad as Aaron's call is, it's even worse when just instrumental, excruciatingly bad. Did you get a sense of any Irish atmosphere in the place?
No, they were very quiet at kickoff. I must admit, I took off my headphones to listen to the anthems, because I've always heard Ireland's call super loud around the place. But yeah, you really couldn't hear many people singing it all. And then when the French anthem came on, my God, you knew you were in Paris. It was absolutely echoing around the Stade de France. They did kind of make themselves heard in their pockets around the stadium after Sam Prendergast's second conversion in the second half. So it took about 65 minutes for the Irish fans to let us know they were there. Now, there wasn't as many of them, of course, but yeah, there wasn't much to get them excited, I suppose. There wasn't much to get them up off their seats or make any noise. So the few that were there definitely weren't making themselves heard in that first half.
Yeah. Let's keep you on the line here, Suzanne, and we'll get some reaction now to last night. First, here's Caelan Dara speaking in the press conference after the match.
I think the bench made a good impact. Faz alluded to it there. There was some good resolve in the second half, but we don't want to be a team that's chasing, you know what I mean? We left ourselves too big a mountain to climb. And that's down to some passiveness in D, not being connected, not being dominant in collisions, allowing them to flourish with their keeping the ball alive in attack.
We had the right intentions with our preparation of how we wanted to play the game, and hopefully that does stand to us, but you cannot play the game at this level without having the right intention. It's an absolute must, and it's the first thing that has to be down on the list to make sure that it's delivered every single time that we take the field.
Andy, are you concerned about the gap that's potentially growing between the top teams, and if so, are you confident that Ireland can close it?
Well, yeah, I am, because I know the people that we've got. I know the good people that we've got, the good players that are not just here, but who are at home as well. I know that there's a determined group to make sure that we are constantly up there at the top of world rugby to be able to compete, and that will always be the case.
Yeah, that's Caelan Dara and Andy Farrell speaking afterwards. That's like you were there, Suzanne, in that room. Like, dejection is the obvious emotion, but seems to be an incredible frustration about that first half display, which was like weirdly lethargic off the ball.
Yeah, can you tell that Andy Farrell, I don't know if you can tell it through the video there, but can you tell he is absolutely fuming?
It's simmering. There's a simmering rage about to burst through, and you were there to feel it.
Yeah, I mean, he came off TV interviews when he came into the press conference, right? And he had certainly calmed down kind of by the time he got to all of us in the auditorium. But if you watch him on the TV, he was saying the lack of intent from his players in the first half. And that's something he just absolutely could not accept. He kind of touched on it in the presser, but he was saying, you know, if it was just a failed game plan or France really outplayed them, you can somewhat take that. But he spoke about how intention from your players is the one thing that has to be top of the list every time you go onto a rugby pitch. And he just didn't see that from his starting 15 in the first 60. And it's hard to argue with him. I mean, France came to play. Ireland did for about 10, 15 minutes at the start of the first half. But then, yeah, they really fell off. France got a lot of momentum. But yeah, Andy Farrell is usually the nice guy. He stuck up for his kind of troops in November a lot of the time when there was difficult questions being asked. He still did yesterday, but you could tell he was absolutely raging. And it's going to be an uncomfortable camp, I reckon, in the build-up to the Italy game.
What do you sense was his priority in that rage list? Was it the fact that they just didn't show up in a game that was already going to be incredibly challenging?
Yeah, I think it was that they didn't play with, I want to say hearts, but I'm not sure they didn't. I don't think that's completely fair. But they just didn't come out there and look like a team that could beat the defending champions. And it didn't look like they believed they could beat the defending champions after they lost that momentum kind of 10 minutes in. And I think that's where his rage stemmed from, that he just wasn't seeing the confidence levels they had maybe showed in training. He wasn't seeing a team who believed in themselves.
Yeah. Let's hear from Jacob Stockdale, who got a start last night based on his form. I guess it was kind of replicating the rest of his teammates, but how it went for him on the night. Here he is chatting afterwards.
It was pretty well documented that I haven't played a six-season scheme since 2021.
Sorry, Jacob. Obviously, you spoke about the aerial battle there. What do you reckon went wrong in a way? Because you guys were set up to be, for it to be a real contest, and maybe they just got the break of the ball a few times too many?
Yeah, I think like with the new laws and, you know, not being able to cradle, it does turn it into much more of a contest. And yeah, like, unfortunately, like, you know, it's the old cliche, the bounce of the ball, but like it is very true in a rugby match, you know, and they were able to pick up more scraps than we were able to.
And I know it's hard to take positives after in retrospect, but as he said, come back on, earning your place on that left wing. We haven't got to speak to you, I suppose. How good was that coming into the game?
Yeah, it was super. You know, it was really nice to have the support from back home. And you know, it was pretty well documented that I haven't played a six-season scheme since 2021. So to be able to get back on the pitch was really special for me. And yeah, like, I just tried to work as hard as I could tonight, and just kind of give everything. So.
Did it feel any different?
No, it felt just as hard. But no, it was like, I think for me as a player and a person, like, I've grown a lot in terms of like resilience, and you know, kind of had to over the last couple of years. And I think that stood to me, you know, particularly tonight. I think that's probably a game in the past where I maybe would have shied away in the second half and not really kind of attacked it as much, whereas tonight I felt like I was able to do that a lot more.
Yeah, Jacob Stockdale there speaking with Susanna and Scrum of Journalists. Dara, this is the type of night where if you weren't playing, you played very well.
Yeah.
There was calls for James Lowe. Where's James Lowe in all this? Jacob Stockdale got his selection nod. Yeah. People agreed with it. We're not going to single him out here, but, you know, how do you think it went?
Yeah, James Lowe's stock has probably risen a decent bit since last night. I didn't think he had the worst game. I think, because almost the focal point of where it went wrong for Ireland with the ball in hand was the high ball, and because he was one of the two players that was tasked to go and retrieve that ball, he's gonna catch some criticism after that game. Mm-hmm. I think with the ball in hand in the second half, when we finally did start to find the edge, when Crowley came on, we had two playmakers on the field and we started to work the ball out wide. He looked decent with ball in hand. I thought he was all right. His passing looked sharp at times, but yeah, not the return to Six Nations rugby he would have been hoping for. But I saw suggestions that James Lowe would have thrived in that game and would have been able to catch a ball at least. And I saw a lot of criticism placed on Stockdale after that performance last night. I don't think he was the winning and losing of that game. I think Tommy O'Brien also didn't have his best performance. I think I said it earlier, when you task two wingers to go up and catch a high ball but don't put any ball into their hands during that half whatsoever on a wet night in Paris, it's a very difficult thing to go and do when your hands are cold, to put it simply. But yeah, I find it tough to criticise him too much, especially since he's been playing fullback very recently as well. Yeah. So he's been thrown into left wing there on a very stark night in Paris. But yeah, I do hope that he does get another chance, because I think he can offer a lot more to that Ireland team going forward.
Susanna, not to be too dramatic here, but is this the beginning of the end for this Irish generation? Because you looked at it last night and was like, geez, they look off the pace. There's a lack of energy, which I think they spoke about on TV afterwards. There was a real lack of oomph about them. And look, the Italy game is there tomorrow week for all to see in Dublin, and maybe that will be the reaction. Then you have England after that. But with the World Cup next year, it's over a year and a half away. Is this going in a direction overall that is worrying? Or are we way too premature in writing off this group of players? What are you leaning towards there in that assessment?
No, I'm definitely worried. Right. I think it's hard not to be after yesterday. And also, when you think about it, like, feels like we haven't played really well since maybe the England game in the Six Nations last year. We obviously had Australia in November, which we saw, you know, pockets of brilliance, but Australia were really poor. So it was so much easier to show pockets of brilliance. And it's a weird one, because last night we fixed the things that everybody thought was causing our downfall. You know, they fixed the scrum, they fixed the line out. They kind of got clarity on a couple of positions, but then they just came out and didn't have any oomph. You said the right word, any oomph whatsoever. They didn't have any organization really in their attack. They, as Dara said, they kicked the ball a lot. It's funny, it looked like they kicked the ball more than France because we got so little return from it. But actually, if you look at the stats, they kicked the ball the exact same amount of times.
Yep.
But France just got so much from every kick that they put through. Whereas it's hard to think of a moment except for that Tommy O'Brien crossfield where Ireland really got something off one of their kicks. I think it is worrying. And I think the likes of Italy, up-and-coming teams, I mean, obviously we'll see how they go against Scotland tomorrow, but they're going to be looking at Ireland now as a team that they can come into a Six Nations and beat rather than the kind of team that they used to fear putting 50 points on them every year. So I think Italy's going to be a really tough game. I really do think it's like back to the drawing board for the Irish coaches and for Andy Farrell. I mean, it hasn't been working. It's not working. And it's hard to know where he can make a major U-turn at this stage a year out or a little over a year out from a World Cup. I think it's a bit early to get super anxious about the World Cup at this stage. I think there is still time. And we saw a few positives from a lot of new players. I mean, the front row was probably the best part of Ireland's game yesterday. And they obviously had Jeremy Loughman there and then Michael Milne come in, Thomas Clarkson. So that's good, like bleeding depth in some core positions, but something has to change, and I don't know what it is, but I hope that Andy Farrell can find it.
Are there any changes to the personnel you'd make for next week? Because I don't think we're putting out a secondary team against Italy in this day and age. I think we're putting out our strongest team. Is there anyone you'd throw in there?
I thought Nick Timoney was excellent off the bench. I don't know if he gets a start or you keep him as that kind of impact player that they seem to like to have these days. It's hard not to argue that Jack deserves a go at 10.
He did all right. They actually did all right together, Sam Prendergast and Jack Crowdy last night when he came on. It wasn't the worst partnership ever.
No,
and yeah, there's an argument to be said, as Dara was alluding to earlier, that having two playmakers on the pitch certainly gave a lot more to their attack than we saw in the first 60. But, I mean, maybe it's not a question of fairness when you're playing for Ireland, but is it fair to put Jack at fullback when he's obviously vying for the 10 position and give Sam another shot when he didn't maybe deserve it after last night's performance? Not to say it was entirely down to him, certainly wasn't. And I actually thought defensively he put in a bigger shift than we've maybe seen from him in the past. So it was actually attacking wise where he couldn't organise last night. But I definitely think Jack brought energy when he came on. But as we've seen in the past, he often brings energy off the bench. It actually seems to be when he starts that.
Yeah.
He doesn't play with the same assurance. So, yeah, maybe a change there, but it's hard to know.
Yeah, you see that, like the sigh there that you said, it's hard to know, and maybe a change there. It's true because you could go throughout this team here, and they're like, we do have an unhealthy obsession with the 10 position, but I actually think it's rightly so these days at the moment because we have to be looking at the World Cup here. Look at these player ratings. Like, look, you can read into what you want when it comes to player ratings and all. The Irish Times gave Prendergast and Gibson Park 5 each. The Irish Independent gave Gibson Park a 4 and Prendergast a 5. And then rugbypass.com gave Prendergast a 4.5 and Gibson Park a 6.
I'd say the external view on Prendergast is a lot less generous than internal in Ireland.
That's kind of exactly where I wanted to go with that, was like, because we're so interested in this whole debate. Is where we're going. Now you listen.
And I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying if you were to look at that last night, what's that guy doing there?
I think you have a point. Yeah. But then listen to Ronan O'Gara during the week talked about, and Harry Byrne included, it was like, I don't think Irish people realise how talented those three tens are.
Yeah.
And it is funny, isn't it, that we don't really talk about Gibson Park in the same chaotic breath as we talk about the tens. I mean,
well, we didn't need to until last night.
Yeah, no, exactly. But he is, you know, responsible for a lot of that attack as well. And we don't seem to question him in the same way as we constantly question the 10s off the back of a poor attacking performance. But yeah.
The one thing I'd say about Gibson Park is I think he's slightly a victim last night to what looked to be a very drilled in game plan of like just put the ball in the air. Mm. Whereas Gibson Park generally is kind of given the keys to the attack. That's always kind of been the way. He's nearly a 10 from that position, and he has, you know, the license to do what he wants with the ball, go blindside if it's on, you know, snipe around the rooks. He wasn't really doing that. Mm. There was bits and pieces here and there, but it felt like it was drilled into them in training that we're going to play the ball in their half, put it in the air, make them catch it, make them make mistakes. And I think that definitely negatively affected his game and what he offers as a nine. But I don't know, like, I really, like you were saying, Susanna, I really liked the two lads on the pitch at the same time. And I think there was, for the Nick Timney try, Crowley is first receiver. And because he's first receiver and Prendergast is kind of out the back, it gives Prendergast an extra maybe 2-3 seconds to think about what he's going to do. And that's where he's really good. When he has a little bit of time, then he's able to find McCluskey, who gets an offload to Timney. So I know we're saying that Crowley wants to be the 10, but if it's better for Ireland to have maybe Crowley at 15 or even 12. Yeah.
Sorry, no, he's not going to get the time at that level, is he? Prendergast.
What do you mean? As in?
You mean he's better with time and the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll target him. Won't they target them?
Well, for sure. But I think when you do have several playmakers out there, like you see with France is the perfect example, and it's probably not completely fair because they play like that week in, week out with their clubs. But Ramos out the back with maybe 3-4 metres extra space and time, you see what he does with the ball. Like, yeah, he's obviously one of the most talented players in world rugby, but he's got to that point because that's the way he plays. If we gave our 10s, who are very talented with the ball in hand and, you know, with a little bit more time, they can do great things, we should probably look into doing that. Not to get too existential about it, because you would be ripping up a bit of our game plan, but I just think there's something in that these lads thrive off a bit more time. So let's give it to them, you know?
And you could see Ramos took so much pressure off Jalibert.
Yeah.
Like, as you said, he's obviously an incredible player and he was on top form last night. But not only in decision-making does he take a little bit of pressure off and allow Jalibert to be who he is, which is chaotic and breaking the line and doing not whatever he wants. I'm sure he's playing in a system, but in a way, whatever he wants, and it works out for him. Mm. But also from a kicking point of view, Ramos takes on so much of the kicking duties, not only off the tee, but on the pitch as well. And he's so good at it. Which, when you remove just, you know, 1, 2, 3 things off a 10s list, you saw Jali played with so much more freedom, open-mindedness, more time to make decisions and do what the 10 needed to do. And obviously he has DuPont as well, marshalling the troops. So it's a different setup. But I do think you're right. I think we need someone at either 12 or 15 who can give our 10s, especially whilst they're young and growing and developing, a little bit of a fallback so that not everything is constantly running through them.
Yeah. It's definitely something to think about in that regard. I don't know if it will happen during the Six Nations. That's the only problem. Before we let you go, Senna, I'm curious to know, right, you got a sense of the reflection last night, speaking with the captain and the coach and some of the other players. Was the overriding sense for you that it was it a state of shock, acceptance, anger? Because I'm very interested in how we react against Italy. Did you get a sense of the feeling of it afterwards about where we're going here?
Doris and Farrow were definitely angry.
Yeah.
There was a long break kind of between full time and when I got to talk to the other players in the mix zone. So I'd say they had time to have their post-match talk, kind of calm down a little bit. But they definitely weren't as angry. I suppose it was all players who were coming in, not to a new environment, but maybe less experienced. And some of them, I think, certainly felt it was still a good opportunity. The likes of Michael Milne probably, you know, he wasn't the worst player on the pitch, let's say. He got his try. So for him, I think it's a case of, I've shown what I can do here. I'm going to keep a hold of this jersey. Similarly for Stockdale, similarly for Cian Prendergast. So there was definitely disappointment, but I think there was hope for them that they had shown a little bit of what they could do. and they were going to take that forward into this Italy game. But yeah, Farrell and Doris, as leaders of this team and coaches of this team, I think they were fuming and they were at loss a little bit as of what to do next, it certainly felt like. But as they always say, they said, I think Farrell had a line that said, you know, no international game, whether it's a massive win or a massive loss, isn't a learning curve. And if we can't learn from this, we can't do anything. So, I mean, as we always say, no better man and no better coach to take something from this and have his men kind of come out fighting next week. But it, yeah, it's just hard to see how he's going to build confidence in them.
Yeah. Yeah. Any final words for Susanna? Before she takes that flight home, looks out the window and reflects on how Ireland can improve in the Six Nations.
Yeah, go get a croissant. Cheers. And a cup of coffee or something.
Susanna, yeah, all well the best. Needed. Nice one. Safe home. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, look, there's an outrageous number of comments coming in here too. Like the player ratings, like, oh, take them with a pinch of salt. They're only a bit of crap. Yeah. Unless you're on the receiving end of them, of course. The Irish Times, quite kind to a lot. The base level is 5 here. And I'm just scrolling through, and pretty much everyone's getting a 5 from the Irish Times player ratings. In fact, Ty Byrne got a 6. You know?
Yeah.
Guy Ringrose got a 6. But everyone else is coming up pretty well from this. Irish Independent, a bit harsher. A bit harsher.
Yeah.
Gary Ringrose, the man who got a 6 from the Irish Times, got a 3 with the Irish Independent. Dude, half that score.
It's game opinions.
That shouldn't be happening.
Tommy O'Brien, a 3. Jamie Osborne, a 4. Stuart McCloskey comes out with an even 5 here throughout.
I honestly thought he didn't do much wrong. I know I sound like I'm completely biased, and I am.
And he'd be right.
I thought he had a decent game. Didn't miss any tackles as far as I saw. He was pretty good in defence, and when he did get the ball, he made some decent meters. 5, maybe slightly harsh. If anyone was going to get a 6, I would say him or one of the front rowers, I thought were pretty good. Ringrose, I love Ringrose. This always seems to come up whenever there's a big game and he gets a poor rating, but yeah, I didn't think he was great. He had that line break obviously towards the end of the game, but yeah, missing tackles, that shooting up out of the line works for Leinster, isn't really working for us, it doesn't seem. I don't know what you do to go about fixing that. I think it's a good asset to have if you can execute it well, but it doesn't really seem to come off for this Ireland defensive system.
Can I ask one question?
One.
You know, they're talking there, and so Farrell's talking about intent and lack thereof. What does that mean?
I think he just means like conviction. And
what does that mean? What shape does that, like, I don't know what that means in terms of what does a team with intent.
Well, giving the 100% and executing the game plan, and
okay,
which was probably the
biggest
issue.
What's your skepticism here?
I'm always curious with things, like, and it's not unique to this scenario at all, but it's just like, didn't play with intent. So it's deliberately vague. It's very hard to dig into that and go, oh, so that was the problem. Because I'm very curious afterwards that, like, and you trust the kind of professionals and the guys who know the game inside out, and the majority of people are going, yeah, that was the right plan. There was some debate over it. Obviously, Alan, he'll be on, he on commentary, like, he was a bit more critical of the kicks. The lads in the studio were a bit more like, that's grand, it just wasn't well done. So I'm coming at the end of it, I'm like, so what's the problem here? What is the actual issue? What's the, like, is it a good plan if they do everything right, if they contest or win 30, 40% of those kicks as opposed to what they did? Is it a different game entirely?
Yeah, I thought the lads in the studio were a bit lenient towards the coaches in terms of, it's like you say, right, so there's having a good plan in theory. Like, in theory, that was a great game plan to have, to get the ball in the air.
Right.
Likelihood is they drop a few balls, we get the ball back 20, 30 metres up the pitch. That's a good game plan. In practice, did we have the players to win the ball in the air over what they had?
So that would suggest...
Probably not.
That would suggest it's Andy Farrell's problem. Or a coaching problem.
I mean,
Root was not to bring everything back. He has a far greater track record here than the example I'm going to give. But like, Ruben Amorim had a great theory of a thing.
Yeah.
And was completely, it was completely inept for the situation he was in. So why would he pick a plan that will be so badly exposed?
Well,
if you're saying like it's like it was not doomed, not necessarily doomed to fail, but it was a kind of case of this is not surprising what's happening here because X, Y, and Z. Because
I'm sure they would have thought they would have won a few more balls than they did. It was very bad, the execution. It was like Stockdale and Tommy Ryan are two players that are pretty decent in the air for their club. They weren't a match for the two lads on the wing for France last night. I going into that game, if you'd asked me who's better in the air, LBB or Tommy O'Brien, I probably would have said LBB, but I would have said if there's 14 balls kicked into the air, Tommy maybe comes back with 5, maybe 6. I wouldn't have said he comes back with 1, you know.
So I think is it an effort thing? Is it like not getting there or someone following or whatever? Like I
think there's multiple factors. There's a bit of luck involved, obviously, as well with certain things. Like, because it is just putting your hand up in the air and look to slap it back. And sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. But I think there was a bit of... I think the main thing for me with the two wingers was maybe a bit of composure, particularly with Tommy O'Brien. I thought at times, I keep going back to that up and under that he kicked. I thought that was a real kind of... That was characteristic, and he got brought off not long after that he was... maybe lost the head slightly and the occasion was getting to him a little bit, obviously. It was his Six Nations debut, so I don't know. Yeah, like the game plan on paper for me was the right thing to do if I was tasked with doing it. Obviously, I've nowhere near the rugby mind as the lads coaching there, but I would have probably went with something similar enough and that put the ball in the air. So but, there was no plan B was my biggest thing. There was no backup thing to go to.
So would you go off the back of that then, that result or the outcome or the all those different things, that it's a bit of a freak and that if you play that game again 99 times...
No, like, it's splitting hairs, like, really, between what... Because it literally is just the bounce of a ball with that game plan. It can go wrong or it can go very right. You know, you can get the ball back. You can easily get the ball back 9 times out of 10 or 1 times out of 10. Same kicks, same chase, everything, you know.
That seems strange to me, though, in a sport that's so detailed, obsessed, that you'd go with something that is such a risk. That you'd go like, well, we'll do this thing, and look, it might work, it might not work, hopefully it does. But there's a great element of risk here that best plans, you know, whatever, we can still, we'll get exposed there. That doesn't seem likely.
I don't know what stats they're looking at. They obviously have much more analytics to look at than we do, and they go into detail on these plans. So obviously there was more to it than just we'll stick the ball up in the air, we might get it back, we might not, we'll see what happens. But you know, my thing is there's nothing to come back on once that didn't work, and that scenario in which it couldn't have worked happened. There was no change up. There was nothing, there was no plan B, there was no, like, even when the players seemed to take over and put the ball through the hands, Gibson Park, in his mind, was go back to kicking.
You'd imagine they were very confident in that plan A working.
Yeah.
They'd hardly not have an alternative with the brains trust there. Hardly not.
So do you think, at the end of that then, at the end of that a difficult evening, would you be more concerned about the playing personnel or the actions from the coaches?
Probably the personnel, I'd say. I felt like athletically we did not match up at all in certain areas of the pitch. I thought we were, like, you look at Guillard, it's the second row there, Olivon. I know Olivon is technically a back row most of the time, but can obviously play a second row. Like, the way they were getting around the pitch, that it showed best in Olivon's try where Guillard plays the ball back in field. We're not doing that. We don't have the athletic ability to do things like that across the board. You see, Susanna mentioned it, the kicking ability of several players in their France squad. We don't have that.
Yeah.
Like, that's my biggest concern going forward if we're to keep up with those type of teams.
Let me ask you this while it's happening, while we're actually in the moment, is we said in the build up to this, the weeks and weeks of build up, that the expectation has gone from this match, right? Everyone's worried, a lot of injuries. And we said, until the ball is kicked and the match starts, and then we'll start reviewing it as if Ireland were full strength and it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So do you get the sense there this morning that people are being a little bit more understanding, or just as critical as they would have been in the 2023 vintage of this squad, which is arguably at its
peak? 2023 has Sexton. So that's I think, that's massive. And obviously they go on to win the Six Nations without him next year, but like, I don't think you can extricate that that you have, like, whatever, one of Ireland's top 5-3 one ever players playing, and now you don't, and you know, whatever. So that's a very difficult thing. I don't know if they've, and again, I'll bow to a greater thing on this, but it does seem to me that they, like, maybe you're somewhat like a slotted Liverpool type thing, where it's like the first year after him, you're still kind of, his aura is still around, and maybe you're kind of somewhat on, whatever the circumstances, all sorts of weird things. Is it as simple as that? Like, you can't, we're not that big of a rugby country, you lose your best player of a generation, it's all of a sudden it's like, yeah, it's really hard to replace.
If you're an off the ball member, you can listen to Andy Dunn back from last night. He's quite positive. He's not that negative about it. There was elements of positivity. If you were to look at my WhatsApp group for free, you would see an awful lot of negativity. You would see that this is the end and they have to start again. To answer your question, both playing and coaching staff need to be upgraded. I mean, that's the view of so you get the views of extremes. You were very helpfully in the live that this morning categorised the comments negative versus positive. And the negatives far away the positives, but there are positives there. By the way, just before I get you in there, Dara, if you are finding this therapy session somewhat cathartic this morning, for a limited time only, you can get your first month of becoming an Off the Ball member for just €1.
Can't do better than that.
€1. That's all your Six Nations coverage, expert analysis, specialist podcasts, and more. We have an outrageous amount of rugby content from the best in the game to listen to. So try OTB for a month for just €1 and see why Ireland's rugby fans never switch off. Download the Goal Out app and join in the obsession today. Hard not to be obsessed with the way France played rugby in that first half. You know, there is that element to it. Really, can we also just take a tiny bit of a moment just to realise that is the sport played in its purest form at
how
one point.
How it's supposed to be played, right?
Because
there,
I tell you what, that try, that third try, the one you talked about.
Yeah.
Guillard to Olivon,
WhatsApp group was quiet. No one said anything. And these would be some of the most opinionated people you'll ever have. And it's just... Because everyone is watching that a little bit impressed. Now, give it 2 minutes later, where the fuck was that? You know, where was he? But for that moment, it was like, that's just too good.
And like, that all came from the forwards as well. It's Gross that gets the... He fixes his man, plays it out to Guillard. And initially I kind of thought, why is he playing it back inside? He has Adesogbe on his outside. He looks like he has a run into the corner. But yeah, it's a little pop back inside between the second rows. It's just lovely. He had a great game, Guillard.
I've one thing, and I can't believe it's not been mentioned, because it's very U-coded. But the little Ramos flick into the Alvarez for the last try.
Second try.
Yeah.
But the kick.
I've
never seen that before. I've never seen anything like that.
She didn't connect to it properly, but it's beautiful.
You think that wasn't what he meant to do?
I think he meant to put it up there, but I think he sliced it a bit. But it was beautiful. I was actually, you know what I loved about it too, top of me coded. So he gets tackled, and as he's getting tackled, right, there's a slow-mo on his face, and he says to the ref, he's like, come on, off the ball, tackle. And then he puts his hand up at the same time, because he sees he gets the ball. It's beautiful.
What I loved about that play as well, before we move on from it, it's him that gives the call that there's space in the backfield as well. So DuPont's at the bottom of the ruck. He can't really see what's behind him. He plays a brilliant kick, obviously. But it's Ramos that says, you know, whatever that call is that they have, that there's space in behind. And he's the one that chases it down and gets a foot to it. And BLBRE, there's no catching him. He made Osborne look slow. And I don't think Osborne's a very slow player. But geez, he made him look like a turtle on that pitch.
A turtle.
He was nowhere near him.
Very last bit for this now. Would Pendergast have been better off leaving it out for 50-22 for that first try? It was a weird motion that you hardly see the hoof up the pitch.
I think the kick was the right decision, the kind of hack kick. It was his decision then. See, he's coming up on the touchline then, and, you know, France play best when they're hugging the touchline, they've lit space and they go through the hands. He kind of comes in towards, Deportera picks the ball up. He kind of comes in towards him, leaves the space on the touchline. And sure, by that time, Moefana, I think it is, and BLBRE have made the ground back up to cover that space. And it just leaves a gaping hole. I think Stockdale has to do better there as well. Needs to take the man. That's kind of rugby basics 101. You take the man with the ball, don't worry about the pass. You just do your job, and he didn't do that. So, preventable try, but again, just brilliance from LBB.
And often you see someone fall to their knees, get back up and keep going seemingly.
Well, it was the one knee down, and it didn't seem to stop his momentum at all, which is outrageous.
Off the ball, breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.